This is the Off the Break Podcast, your podcast dedicated to current movie theater news, operations, and insights from the people that book the movies. Now, here are your hosts, Cody, Kyle, and Ken.
You ready to kick into a new week with Kung Fu Panda opening last weekend? Getting right up to the biggest projections we had.
Yeah.
Biggest projections the film companies had. 55 million.
Mm-hmm. Beat that.
Our biggest animated film since...
Oh my gosh.
Mario,
I would say.
Easily Mario.
Yeah.
I mean...
I don't think... No, because none of the ones last year...
Everything was...
And at Christmas, nothing opened.
12 million. 15 million.
Yeah.
20 million or like, whoa.
Sorry, this is good for information, but I can't help but mention to the listeners that quiet wah that Cody did was her trying to do a jump kick.
I was trying to kick up. I have short legs and it didn't make it into the camera. I go all the way back to get that foot up there.
I didn't marry a can-can girl, that's for sure. there were no high kicks in our marriage. Wah! Which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get a roundhouse kick.
Low sweeping kicks.
Yeah, no
karate stars in this family.
I take out ankles.
Kicked. Yeah, I've been kicked in the shins before, but never in the side of the head.
Anyway, we can go back to this. And an anime movie topic. I just needed to bring that
Kyle
up.
Kyle had to get it out.
It was driving me nuts that we weren't bringing it up. That her little... Ah! That's the context of that.
Sha-sha-sha! Back to Kung Fu Panda, $55 million opening. Had a very strong opening,
mm-hmm.
Great reviews, huge awareness for an animated film that we yeah. saw.
Well, it's the fourth in a series. I hope there's a big awareness for it at this point.
Right, but still,
well,
I mean...
it's 10 years since the last one, right?
Or yeah. Kids' eight, movies like generally don't have the same amount of awareness as anything
I guess so. They
PG-13
grow up
or higher.
You have a whole new little batch that comes up.
Right, but also the awareness we have doesn't measure kids' films well. Like, it doesn't...
Could, yeah.
Like, we had... Mario had similar, like, mm-hmm. tracking awareness.
Right.
But in our world, with children, that's all they were talking about.
It was. They were very excited. They kept asking, when's this movie coming out?
I mean,
for Mario.
For Mario.
Yeah, for yeah. Mario and for Kung
Fu Panda. We're getting some with this, but like, yeah, Mario was fun because it was like kids knew that we worked in movies, so mm-hmm. they would ask us and ask the kids, like, mm-hmm. and kids being what they
What's
are.
What's Jack Black like?
kids being what they are were asking or were like, I saw, like, 2 weeks before Mario opened, like, I saw Mario last night lying to each other about how great it was. Yeah. They had seen it. Owen saw Mario last week. I go, no, he didn't.
No one saw
You can
it.
Tell him that he didn't. You can tell him to his face he didn't see it.
That's called a liar, and we have to call them out so they learn.
Yeah. Kick him low like Mom does. Dune only dropped 44%, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
Especially
no.
for sci-fi.
I was surprised. I was hoping it was going to be like around a 50% drop, which is like a normal average drop. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes these movies open and if you get into the 60%, then you just know the movie's bad and it's not going to leg out the way we would like. But mm-hmm. this one dropping less than 50 is awesome.
Yeah, the word of mouth is clearly what is helping keep this movie staying afloat when it comes to staying in theaters.
We're going
to
see Dune over 10 million for a 5-week stretch, possibly.
Could be.
Which is awesome.
Getting a lot of repeat viewing, a lot of adult audiences. I think, you know, people were waiting and the good word of mouth is helping them. And then it's not just that they're saying, oh, this is a good movie. Because hearing, oh, this is a good movie, that makes people be like, oh, I should probably check that on streaming. It's, oh, it's a good movie. You have to see it on a big screen.
And worth your time.
Yeah.
Worth your money.
It's worth your time and money. You want to see the spectacle. And that's where movies like Dune are really finding their pace with IMAX and preferred large format screens. They're just really holding in there.
And we were fairly positive when it came to Dune 2 prior to its release. But even this is blowing our expectations, I feel like.
No, I mean, Warner Brothers projections were like 200 to 220 total
mm-hmm.
after the first weekend. And it's going to blow past that.
It could. It could.
It should.
Well, but it's going
to... By what we're seeing.
It's going to hit some stiff competition in the next few weeks. Kung Fu Panda is not...
Oh, Arthur the King is stiff competition?
I said in the next few weeks. I didn't mean this week. Kung Fu Panda, Arthur the King, not its competition. I think when you hit Ghostbusters and Godzilla...
Do you think Warner Brothers regrets putting Godzilla this close?
I think so. And taking screens off?
I never understood why they did that. I mean, it's great that we have like more blockbusters in a month, but why would they want to do that to their own?
I don't think they expected it to do this. I think they expected it to be like a 4 week.
They were projecting 65.
Opening, yeah.
Which one?
For Dune. They were projecting a $65 million opening.
That's reasonable.
Right, very reasonable, and it would have come off after four weeks. It was out. It would have been out of the IMAXes.
65 to 30 to 15 to 7 by the time Godzilla opens, and you're not keeping that around in big auditoriums. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to keep Godzilla out. But if they had given it two more weeks and put it in the middle of, I mean, put it right with Civil War on April 12th,
you have
a run.
Which it was there, wasn't it?
It was because they had that Mickey 17, which seems to be anything with Robert Pattinson seems to be a doomed project now.
Right. You think so? Oh, well, I guess it was just recently announced that the Batman 2 got pushed back a year, right?
Yeah.
A whole year, and this Mickey 17 is MIA.
No, it's been released next year. It's on the release schedule.
January.
For now, yeah.
Right. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
But the trailer we have is like him in ooze.
No,
yeah, it's like 30 seconds of him in ooze.
Or a tube. It's like
it's a cool looking tube.
It's a sci-fi tube.
It's an alien tube. It's whatever Sigourney Weaver lives in.
Yeah. Just imagine that, but with Robert Pattinson. They nailed it.
Yeah. No, I think it'll be fine, and Godzilla will do great. It would be nice to have one big tentpole in April. We don't really have that. I think the first part of April with Monkey Man is going to be good. Abigail is going to do okay. Mm-hmm. But these aren't like that big like PG-13 film that you're really going to get everybody to.
Is Monkey Man R?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. I think that's...
If the super dark trailer didn't tell you that they were... Insinuating, I haven't seen a PG-13 movie that dark.
True.
And just the fire and the children crying.
I mean,
and...
John Wick is R-rated, but they got using more colors as like each movie has progressed.
It got brighter.
It got brighter as time's gone on. So I'm thinking Monkey Man is like stage one of a potential John Wick
to where it's
franchise
like a full
starter.
Like Bollywood with like the spices in the air and like everybody's painted with stuff. That'll be by three. It'll just be full on.
They'll be dancing.
Why not?
It'll be so much color.
It'll be musical
it'll
by three.
Hurt your eyes.
I can't wait to see that arc. I think it could happen. I don't know. My enthusiasm for Monkey Man has me more hopeful, but I think you guys are obviously being more rational.
No, I think Monkey Man's going to be good. In fact, when I look at that versus Abigail, I'm more excited about Monkey Man.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
Vampires only work.
Universal's higher on Abigail, but I think Monkey Man... They're worried about the Indian perspective of it, that American audiences might not take to like an Indian origin story, like an Indian myth. But
right.
I think American audiences are ready for something new. And so
something they haven't seen before.
Yeah. And
haven't
experienced
that before. Yeah.
But with the grit and like all of the action of a John Wick hand-to-hand combat.
The action feels familiar.
But he's not a superhero. He gets beat up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the films always try to use India as a backdrop, but they always put James Bond in it, and it's like a white guy in India.
Right.
But when you put an Indian person in India with the background, with the story,
awesome.
I think it will work. But we got to talk about the Oscars.
Oh yeah, Oscars were this last weekend.
Yes, and our awards were better. But,
clearly.
But it seems like they had
We awarded Barbie a little bit more than Barbie got at the Oscars.
We were
more favorable to the Barbies.
I'm not surprised Barbie wound up being a nomination-only type of movie for the Oscars. I was pulling for it in some categories, but I think the Academy still has that stigma of like, a movie about dolls, like it impressed, but you're not ready for a win quite yet.
It was too pink and too bright for us to really give it an award.
I'm sure that there are many voters that were like, ew.
The color palette alone keeps it from getting nominated.
Yeah. Right. And as much as I wanted the awards spread out, like Christopher Nolan finally got his due at the awards.
On one that I think he really, you know, he probably deserves it on a lot of his films, but this one I think was really commercially at the time. And you know, I'm really pro Christopher Nolan because he really pushed to have his film play during the pandemic. And
he gets like appealing towards audiences. No.
That's,
like,
a dollar.
That's a dollar. That's not fair. I mean, come on.
For those who may have missed the episode last week, there's a new rule to where anytime we mention what became of that awful year that we don't want to talk about.
The pothole year in the history of cinema.
We bring a dollar to our little dollar jar that we have next to us.
Yeah, Kyle was the first one.
I forgot 20 minutes after that rule got made out.
I just remembered. If I hadn't said anything, would you guys have
Yeah, I
it?
Was waiting for you to finish your thought.
Darn it.
After I finished my sentence, I was like, oh, wait, she said it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt. And
well,
I really wanted to put your dollar on a pedestal.
He really pushed for Tenet to be released. And I think he needed to be rewarded for that because he sacrificed that movie for the greater of the industry.
He sacrificed his relationship with Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. Like, they parted ways after that.
Right.
And then now it's like, okay, you can have an office on our lot. Yeah. You're back in our good graces. And if I were him and the kind of support, the undying support that Universal showed him, mm-hmm. I mean, even on our side of the industry where we still haven't gotten Oppenheimer into discount theaters, to dollar theaters,
no.
It's still not available to them. The fact that we haven't gotten that yet shows that they, you know, we're willing to sacrifice, put money on the table to support this film. And support
him. But is that really supporting the film?
It is. It is in their minds, but it was really like undying loyal support for the film that it until it got what it was due,
right
on the stage. We weren't even gonna show that it was this kind of
except on streaming. We're gonna let it go there.
No, correct.
We're gonna
I agree.
Play discount movie theaters.
I agree. It was a crazy thing, but it's the fact that. You know, I would have a hard time. I know he's going to work with Warner Brothers soon, but I would have a hard time seeing him like not being with Universal for
You think
he gathers allies? I think it is best for him to pit two studios against each other.
Of course.
So yes, it is absolutely. Good
competition
for him.
Is good.
I need $200 million for this movie, and somebody's going to come over the top and say, "Take $225 million. We'll figure it out." Because he's never going to make a $5 million movie ever again.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Martin Scorsese hasn't made money at the theaters in a long time, and he's still getting that kind of money.
Eventually, Nolan's time will come as well.
we'll cross that bridge.
Yeah.
Unless he does the Tarantino thing and just is like, I'm done.
Yeah. You know what? 10 was enough.
Yeah. You would think at some point you'd run out of creative juices.
I know he's doing Tarantino's last film is about the movie critic, but I wish he'd do one more and do it about the movie theater owner. He's not a very good portrayal of a movie theater owner. He's a terrible movie theater owner, but...
He owns one now, right? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Right.
Him. But I think that would be that would be really nice to have a theater like that.
It would have way more of a bite and an edge compared to the movie critic.
They did a little bit of that where they showed some of that with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Where they showed a little bit of like the box office and how it was awkward and what it used to look like, which was interesting.
But it also leaned more towards like how it affects like a tortured actor compared to like a business owner who's tortured by not seeing results. So,
but yes,
still could be more towards the movie.
Oppenheimer won the most awards.
We'll just make that movie. Off the Break podcast, we'll make that movie.
Oh yeah, high in production value.
Yeah.
Oscars, here we come.
We'll use AI and our high-end production
they
value.
I don't know if we
studio.
Can afford AI. We might have to use BI.
we can't afford AI.
We'll take C+I.
Yeah.
At this point. So what was your standout thing from the Oscars? I know what Cody's was.
Let's start with her then.
It was, of course, the I'm Just Ken musical number. That's the only thing I wanted to see, and it delivered.
Finally, not finally, but it's nice when there's a song that gets nominated that just has a nice pop for not just the people in the room, but for, you know, people watching it who might have fallen asleep if it got too boring.
I was really excited when Adele sang Skyfall, but that song is, like, somber and kind of, and she just was on stage and was kind of
It's also
boring.
Adele, like, yeah.
And her voice is beautiful. Yeah. But there was... not a lot of stage production on that one. So this one with him getting up and moving around and fake punching people, and it was just that made it fun.
His talent,
that was showmanship to me.
Is so amazing because he clearly wanted to burst out laughing
the entire time.
Yeah. And yet he just still like keeps it in tune and he sings through the entire thing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't miss a beat. He's just a blessing. He's awesome.
Yeah, he was great. And then I'm going to come in with mine, which is John Cena going completely naked on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
showing off
a sock.
Showing off our similar physiques.
Right.
Mine and his on stage.
Exactly the same.
It's nice to have representation, right?
It was,
to
of course.
See yourself on the screen.
It was, yeah. It was nice.
You're like, my story is being told.
Yeah, it felt like it. It really did. I get the idea of representation.
Me too. I was like, Ken, how'd you get on screen? Yeah. I was confused for a second. That's the view I get all the time.
The only difference was the tan, yeah. Yeah.
You're more tan.
Yeah, you're definitely darker. Yeah. That's for sure.
Oh, we get great sun out here in Montana.
Yeah.
That winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really roasts us.
Yeah.
For myself, I got to go with the Batman bid between Michael Keaton, and Danny DeVito, and Arnold.
Yeah, it was definitely a nice, they always try to do humor, but it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
They're like, that was a joke that didn't work out. I mean, but it was a lot of fun to see, you know, I expect a Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger project somewhere in their old age.
It's gotta be coming.
Twins 3, 2, did they make two of those?
They did Junior, which is where Arnold got pregnant and Danny DeVito was around.
Right.
So they've had a couple, but I would expect like an old man, like get off my lawn comedy with the two of them.
Like a grumpier old man.
It could be fun.
It is surprising that hasn't happened yet.
I think they're finally conforming to this now. Like Arnold with the gray beard.
Mm-hmm.
Danny DeVito is, you know,
I think
only
Danny
done
DeVito's
comedies.
Been there. I think he's self-aware.
He'd be ready, but it's time for them to be like in charge of it, or like battle an HOA or something.
Yes.
Situational comedy.
I identify
comedy.
With that.
Yeah. Yeah. Something where they all of a sudden are like, now they're new dads again at like 70. Oh, something crazy.
Gross. A Pacino De Niro situational,
yeah,
comedy.
Something like that. But it's like them going through like the baby stage as old men who are
all
like
over
set
again.
Their ways. Arnold like putting down a cigar to change a diaper.
Arnold would be able to pull that off too. Like he was always good at obviously standing out from everyone in the comedy, but he still is able to like pull off the comedic charm of being like, of course I'm an everyday man. Why would people look at me differently?
Yeah. And he's funnier. He's funnier now than he was like.
He's
back
learned
then. Like,
yeah.
In interviews and stuff, he's always had personality, but he like gets the timing and the jokes now.
Right.
Where it fits in a lot better.
Yeah. He learned on the fly when he was working as an actor.
Yeah. So anything else from the Oscars? I know we had talked about bring backs last week and
we only had
a few.
I feel really good that going into the Oscars in that January, February corridor, I picked out a few films that I thought we should play, and I picked American Fiction, obviously Boy and the Heron for like off the break things in smaller towns.
Poor things.
I was really choosy about where that played because you got to go with what
the
branding
subject matter
works
and
with the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The subject matter works with the audience at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really good. Like Boy and the Heron won. I was super happy to see that one win.
Godzilla won.
For a technical.
Ooh, I should have said that one. That one was a favorite of mine, too.
Yeah. I
had a good feeling about that underdog story.
Right. That had a good underdog story. I'm going back to The Boy and the Heron. I love how hand-drawn animation
mm-hmm.
made a comeback. I just think there's something so beautiful and soft about that. Maybe I'm just nostalgic for it because that's the type of animation we grew up with. But
did a hand-drawn anime movie get nominated or win last year? I think it did. I'll double check, but it just popped into my head that might have been the case.
I wouldn't be surprised because that's what people fall for. It's hard for them to like make Spider-Man an Oscar award winner, even though it's so.
It's already won one. The first one won.
I know,
one.
But
the second one didn't need to win one again. We all
that's how that
recognized it's had the same animation style as the first one.
Yeah, but then it went like it was bigger and more impressive, like. More time was spent on it. Like, there has to be, I get the hand-drawn animes with...
They had to bring people out of retirement to teach a younger generation about those hand-drawn techniques.
That's kind of spooky to hear.
That's how amazing that is that snore, luckily there are people still alive that could do it.
People can still draw. I get it, but we got to move on.
No,
not AI, but we can have someone who was born in the last 30 years just draw something.
And I would say that Spider-Verse deserved an Oscar if it hadn't already just won an Oscar for the first part of that movie.
I'm sure that was a lot of voters thinking too, yeah. Was that it's part one of a part two movie. We already nominated a Spider-Man movie before. Yeah, Boy and Heron's also a good movie, so it makes sense.
Politics.
Also, Pinocchio won last year, and I don't think that's 2D, so.
That one was
Which
weird.
Which one won last year?
Del Toro's Pinocchio.
Super weird one.
Wasn't that, stop motion?
You're right.
Yeah. Stop motion, Netflix movie 2, boo.
Well, that's why I didn't remember it, because those aren't real movies.
Fair enough.
All right, so that wraps up. The awards season.
The biggest Oscar talk we've had in years on this podcast.
Right. I mean, for any reason, because there's just you're not going to ever see the Oscar bump anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what makes it kind of exciting is trying to find the films and plan beforehand. I think that's where you really target and cultivate.
And this year was a good one.
Yeah. You had a lot of good options.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, you rely on me for this. Oh, for
I know
these transitions.
We interrupted your last transition. We wanted to make up for it.
Well, we're going to get back into theater-specific stuff.
Mm-hmm.
CEO of Cinemark had a big interview and...
With investors.
Investors and dropped...
So it was an interview.
Yeah. dropped a lot of information about upcoming stuff and, you know, had a... You know, very reasonable mark on things, I think. I think it was, we have a lot of people who say the industry's dying, it's garbage, there's no way coming back. And then you have people that are just trying to prop up stock prices and say, it's better than it's ever been, it's going to be great.
I feel like Cinemark as a chain and as a company has always been pretty even keel. They weathered certain turbulent times better than other companies did, and I think that's just because they didn't overextend themselves financially on things.
She's trying to talk around it.
And so
she does not want to lose a dollar, and it's not even her dollar.
I think they're good. I think barometer of, you know, they're not going to overinflate anything, which is nice to see about what the state of the industry is in this year. And there was some good things he said, that admissions are coming back and things like that. But he did say that this 24 is going to be a tougher year than even 23 was, because we have less films due to strikes. So, he gave some numbers, and I think in 24, it's expected that there'll be 95 wide release films. Mm-hmm. And I think last year they had over 100, I think it was like 113.
Yeah.
Last year. And
around that ballpark.
So, you know, 52 weeks of the year, that's an average, that's less than two films a weekend. And we all know that not every weekend is treated the same. So, we're looking at this year and we're seeing it already some weeks with no wide releases or one wide release.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not healthy for our industry at all. And I think that's what's going to make 23 hard. And he kind of put it more in perspective just for investors on a bigger scale with big numbers. Now, he said it will come back in 25 because there are films that were slated for 24 that got pushed to 25 because of the strikes and stuff like that. So 25, I think, will be back to over that 100 mark. But mm-hmm. I thought the most interesting thing was when you really put in numbers is because we've always talked about the flow of films and how we don't have enough. You don't want too many because then something gets lost, but you need enough to keep things moving, and that anything under 100, I think, is not enough films, which is, I've never really thought about that number before.
It doesn't feel like, I don't know, it didn't feel like it was 100, but... then again, I guess I never put a number to it. Like, I just mm-hmm. never really thought about
it. It's never something we've super quantified.
Yeah, we've never thought before
never had
how
actually...
many wide releases were in a year.
Yeah.
But
it feels like a lot or a little.
Right. But I guess because we're eyeing a year with so few, mm-hmm. and you start really do thinking about the numbers. And...
Sure.
Yeah. And we've lost three from Amazon MGM, who was... came in last year as the biggest proponent of theatrical.
Oh, we're going to have 12 films a year just for theaters.
And then we lost...
Doesn't feel like 12 yet.
But we lost Snoop Dogg's Underdogs. Mm-hmm. We had a L.A. Riots movie with Tyrese that is nowhere to be found. And then the one we always talk about...
The Roadhouse.
Roadhouse is going to...
Apparently that was always going to be streaming.
Whatever it is, the back and forth that they have. But
yeah, they're all lying.
Right, but it's streaming only, so that's three. I mean, with right. Amazon committing to what they said they were going to do, we would have been over 100.
Yeah.
Easily.
Not, I mean, not
that's
over.
Three movies. That's three movies in before March. Right, before March is over,
wouldn't have quite got us to 100. But
that's three
Warner's
in 3 months.
Film and,
yeah,
I mean, all the studios are doing this. So
right, but not almost their entire slate.
Yeah,
I mean, they haven't released a movie yet this year.
It just
they were released in December
when Disney bought out Fox and we lost that competitor. We just also lost an opportunity for that. You know, 6 to 10 films a year.
Right
there.
Yeah.
With a major studio that would market it. And we're really seeing, I think we're finally now really seeing the effects of that.
Yep. And Searchlight too. Like they were competing against each other. And now it's like, well, we're not going to put our movie on that date if we have this movie that week or a week before or 2 weeks before.
I bet 2/3 of Searchlight's product is now Hulu releases.
Right.
Like it feels like twice in a month I see a new Searchlight specific movie being released.
And you know
there
what's
first
crazy is that guy that was heading Searchlight is now being upped at Disney, and so you just wonder if that same philosophy is also getting upped in the film side too.
I mean, the CEO of Cinemark's mentioned that he's been hearing from a lot of the studios that they're going to be trying to push back towards theatrical, and they're learning really big mistakes of streaming to where they really want to pivot back to theatrical. But then we hear about a guy from Searchlight who has been having half of his releases go straight to streaming, now the head of Disney's movies. And it's like, I don't know, that doesn't really give me confidence as much as I wish it did.
I don't know what the major studios are going to do. They know that the money is in theatrical, that theatrical gives value and, you know, to these films when they go to streaming, but they also have streaming services that need to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do they go? They're just trying to find what the formula is to maintain profit at these for their streamers, for investors, but they have to go the theatrical route to get that profit. And they just don't know how much theatrical they need to do. That's like the sweet spot. I think all theatrical is the sweet spot.
And
but
Warner Brothers seems to have this down pretty well with everything going to Max.
I would think so, but they...
After the fact.
But what they're doing that's shady is they're just canceling movies and then getting tax write-offs. So they're not even seeing the light of day for us to be like, well, you should have put that in theaters.
Right. But the general release pattern that they have seems to be working okay.
I think that their release
pattern
is
Wonka
the best.
Went on streaming a little early. It should have waited probably another month because it's still in the top 10.
But it was 90 days.
But it's still in the top 10.
Agreed.
Like you need
it's
to.
It's been 90 days.
It came out in December and it's March.
Oh my God, that's right. Jeez,
it came out before Christmas. It is almost St. Patrick's
Time
Day.
Time isn't infinite. That's cool. That's fine. Okay.
I know.
I have my panic attack
too,
over here
because I was mad because I was going to hold Wonka. In spots.
And then you count
again.
It on the calendar and you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
all
right. Right.
You
but,
did the thing.
I mean, 90 days is 90 days. But if you have something that's still making $7 million a week, it's like.
Push it back another week.
I don't know. Nobody's clamoring for it just because you said. And that's why they making these announcements so far ahead of time doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Like things are fluid.
Right.
And the fact that Universal Focus does the 17 days on almost everything.
I hate that.
Yep.
Almost everything makes it impossible to try to capitalize on it.
Not only do they do that, but then they turn around and be like, you can't comment on it. You can't use us taking it to streaming as an excuse not to play us.
And I mean, Disney
yes,
does that
I can.
Too. I mean, everybody, all the film companies do that.
Right. But then, they do it the worst.
Right. But it's, you know, you would think announcing any time ahead of time, mm-hmm. it's like, you would think it's a treasure hunt. Like, all of a sudden, like, you announce on Monday that on Friday, Wonka's going to be on streaming. Mm-hmm. Like, and then build up and see how many subscriptions you get and, like, actually quantify it.
Right.
Like, we got 30,000 additional subscriptions this month because we announced it the week of.
Right. We could see what the bump
just,
was that
versus
week.
Just saying it's coming out on 3/15. Yeah. That's when you're going to see it. And announcing it in December the opening.
I do think that Wonka just really benefited from not having a lot of competition in January and February. It was a good PG film. And, man, we just haven't had great family films that you could take kids or grandma to.
Like, oh, yeah.
Those are it's so crazy how rare those films are. And you would think that should be the bread and butter of our industry. But
parents,
they are so
parents,
rare.
Parents notice this too, I have to imagine. I mean,
absolutely.
Have you guys had conversations with parents, like, off the top of your head? They know you guys work in movies, they're like, where are our movies?
Well, I've had conversations with other moms that are like, we just want something nice. Nice movies to take the kids to. Nothing with an agenda in it. Nothing that's necessarily animated. Like,
sure.
like people movies. That are just nice to have a nice story or theme or lesson learned, but isn't the whole
friendship's
agenda of
the key
movie.
To
yeah.
life. There
yeah.
you go.
But I mean, similar, we had success with Boys in the Boat, but it didn't go young enough where
no, that
kids
was
could see it.
Older.
But I mean, nice. Nice
it
seems to
nice.
Be the word
and,
that we're
and that
looking at.
Held in for matinees for senior citizens and on the senior discount. So for so many weeks it was just
yeah I remember
I mean up until we had plenty of complexes that held Migration through Kung Fu Panda
yeah
opening, which was, you know, 10 years ago was like a hard out in the industry.
Usually
nobody
would
carry
it would just
animated
die.
Into each other
yeah
they I'm not doing that, and it was a perfectly acceptable policy because especially if they were from the same film company,
right?
But now it's like, I'm not going to get rid of my number 4 movie.
Yeah,
like
and for the most part the Kung Fu Panda killed off those migrations.
Right.
There were a few places where
shot them out of the sky.
Where yeah. it held on, but only because I think it's overflow from having sold out Kung Fu Panda screenings. Not
right.
So they used it as a nice second backup. I think as a theater, though, you would have behooved you to have more Kung Fu Panda screens so you didn't have an overflow into another movie.
Right, which was the original line of thinking. That's yeah. how it had always worked. But
I think that still works better today.
It does, but it just also
give
doesn't.
Give people what they want, Ken.
Yeah.
If they want a Kung Fu Panda, you give them Kung Fu Panda.
Hi-ya! Oh.
Cody just did a backflip. That was crazy. She kicked down 20 bricks all stacked up.
But after the success of March, where January and February were obviously down because we didn't have Avatar.
Yeah.
We had things grossing okay, but we didn't have that big movie to push us over the...
You know, and I thought going into it, and this is just me, even with all my experience, I was like, we'll survive not having an Avatar or Star Wars or one of those big movies because we have so many other films that hit all the audiences. But the numbers were just down overall. I mean, yeah. It really did make an impact to not have that huge Christmas title. It
yep.
is so needed to get you through that January, especially.
I guess for audiences, like, it's that big title is the one way to get them through the door. And if that's not the option, then they ended up being surprised by, you know, the title below that. Like
yeah.
Star mm-hmm. Wars, if you can't, then Jumanji that one year, 2017 or whatever it was.
Right.
We're going to, I mean, they're going back to that this year where we have Wicked, Moana, Mufasa.
Mufasa, yeah.
I mean,
hopefully we have.
I don't believe that movie's going to be real. I just need to see something for myself. I don't know.
It's not, it's all CGI, Kyle. It's not going to be real.
Well, you know, you know what I mean? Like, this is a movie premise that I can't believe they want to make, but I just need to see that it becomes real.
After how much you guys shit on the original live action Lion King.
Original.
Like, yeah, the original live action Lion King. Lots of prefaces.
Okay.
The non Jonathan Taylor Thomas Lion King. As much as
the
you got,
true Lion King,
as much as this podcast before I joined it just took dumps all over that movie, and then it opened and was massive and played all summer.
Wasn't a good movie, Ken. It's okay.
It's Lion King. It's gonna do a big number.
Yeah, you're probably
right.
It's gonna be
one of these things like we go back and look at it and go, I don't know that that was gonna work, and then it just stacked money. it created its own printing press.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to you guys with Wicked.
I'm just a skeptic, I guess.
I forgot about that Wicked conversation. Yeah.
They're gonna be printing money with twisters and witch noses on it after that. They like might move forward. I mean, Universal, this is their second year at the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be number three.
Yeah.
Because of Despicable Me and Twisters, and then Wicked at the very end. And I have strong hopes for, like we talked about, Monkey Man overperforming what historically those movies do with mm-hmm. very diverse casts and being rated R.
Yeah.
And then Fall Guy, I think, has the opportunity to be a big movie, even though it is big in scale, big in budget. There's no reason why, with the press around it, that it can't be a $200 million grossing film.
Right. In total.
Yeah.
I think that one will have a pop too. I'm excited for seeing the results of Fall Guy.
Yeah.
I think audiences are, not that this is a great comparison, but I think after Anyone But You kind of had the pop that it did, I think audiences are ready for like the rom-com to come back. But at least this one also has like the addition of Ryan Gosling as an action star.
I think it has the opportunity to be nice.
It does.
That's all we need. Something nice.
Something nice. That should be the theme of this year. And something nice.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tack on that I had seen the trailer and kind of written it off as a generic thing. Kyle, my favorite like supporting actor, Winston Duke, is in it.
Fall Guy, he is in that, as the stunt
coordinator.
You're all in now.
I am so in for this, and for him playing a beefing hulk of a man that blows other people up.
He's going to give you the biggest laughs too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be small parts, but they'll get the laughs.
I know.
He's a really funny guy.
I'm ready for him to redo the Arnold and Stallone series, for him to play Winston Duke in The Commando.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, you pitched me. I'm sold.
Glenn Powell,
B-level AI.
Glenn Powell is my future leading man who's going to be the person that brings people into theaters. Winston Duke is going to be, you know, his
action counterpart.
His Steven Seagal. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be the one that, like, bats clean up and takes the second weekend of his movies knees
I'm
up.
I'm loving these one for once.
And I'm saying that, and he's probably, like, 45. Like, we don't have any young guys, like real young guys.
I think coming Winston
to Duke, he looks young. If
I think
he is 45,
younger than us.
He's younger than us.
I think he's younger than us.
I don't know.
I bet a dollar on it.
So he's 27.
You want that dollar back, Cody?
You're not getting that dollar back.
I want my dollar back.
You messed
bet
up.
A dollar on it.
Why? What'd you lose a dollar for?
I don't know. It just came and went.
It just came out of my pocket and went right in the cup.
He is 37 years old. You guys
he's
don't
younger
have
than you.
He's younger than me.
I was going to say, right, you can keep the numbers a secret.
On that random actor note, let's get out of here.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Happy birthday, Winston Duke.
Happy birthday, Winston Duke, baby.
Whatever time it is.
Every day's his birthday.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Off the Break Podcast. Find us on all podcast platforms and be sure to like and follow our Facebook and Instagram pages at Off the Break Podcast.